Reviewing Stand 1, Aravex. Unaware of the sudden drama unfolding on the other side of the wire, the War Games Autobot observers were actually starting to become slightly bored. The game was in a maneuvering phase right now, with the blue side feeling out Red's perimeter defenses and the Red scouts working to keep the defenders one step ahead. This was militarily interesting, and held Prowl's attention readily. But some of the others were finding it less than entirely stimulating, if they were honest. That was about to change. "Holy, did you see that?" Sideswipe said. "Back it up! Eject! Back it up!" "What?" Eject's image asked from one of the monitors. "Red base camp, camera 3, back 0.55. "Yeah, look at that!" Trailbreaker leaned closer to the screen. "Is that Razorclaw?" "Yep, right under Scavenger's nose." "Man," said Cliffjumper. "Thundercracker's lucky this is just a game." "Yep, I think we're about to see Red log a command change," Sideswipe agreed. "I'm not so sure," Braun remarked. "You looking for a little action on that?" Sideswipe asked. "Sure. What do you have in mind?" Eject, sensing excitement in the offing, threw that camera to the big main display, just in time for the audio stream to include a noise so loud the pickups could only register it as a sort of high-pitched twang. On the screen, the whole side of the building Razorclaw had entered disintegrated, bursting outward, and the Predacon leader hurtled across the empty lot beyond to crater the half-fallen wall opposite. Scavenger, who a moment before had been standing next to the door, staggered back in visible shock. A moment later, Thundercracker emerged from the shattered ruins of his makeshift barracks, and he did not look amused. "It took you long enough to make your move, Razorclaw," he observed. "Did you seriously think I'd take a rest period in the middle of the game?" Razorclaw picked himself up, transforming to robot mode, and drew his blazer sword. "Don't try to bluff me," he snarled. "Your reactions are good, but you were still sloppy." Thundercracker gritted his teeth. "I'm getting tired of being underestimated. First by my own troops, now by you. But if I have to make another example, that's fine." He held out a hand for stalling Scavenger as the Constructicon shook off his shock and readied his weapon. "Stand down, Scavenger. I'll deal with this myself."
Okay, Scavenger replied.
"Fool!" Razorclaw roared, leaping. "You're scrap!" Right then and there, something inside Thundercracker seemed to snap. In dealing with Runamuck's insubordination, he had been cool, measured, as if he were playing the role of Megatron as Icy Commander. Now, faced with Razorclaw's arrogant dismissal, he seemed to draw his inspiration from a different facet of his returned leader, Megatron's supremely focused fury, the single-minded drive to destroy the foe that had served him so well against Shockwave. If the former had been surprising to both his temporary subordinates and the Autobot observers, the latter was downright shocking. They all remembered Thundercracker as reasonably powerful but lacking focus, unsubtle, and not too bright, the kind of bot who could safely be trusted with the job of, say, blowing up a dam, but not anything more taxing than that. There were those, though, among the Autobot old guard, who had dim, faded memories of ancient times, and they found those tattered old data tracks returning to life at the sight that unfolded before them now. Razorclaw's first inkling that something other than blind luck had been involved in his failure to carry out a quick, clean, mock assassination on the Red leader came when Thundercracker stood his ground instead of fleeing to the air, as he might have expected any Sky Soldier to do in the face of his fury. He had been prepared for that. Such a cowardly stunt would have earned Thundercracker the full attention of all 5 Predacons, who would have brought him to ground and torn him apart, game or no game. Instead, the Jet Warrior remained in robot mode, faced Razorclaw's charge, and unleashed a storm of incendiary fire on the Predacon leader, then sidestepped his strike and wrenched the sword from his hand with a quick, precise, metallicato empty-hand counter. Razorclaw was still recovering from the shock of that reversal when Thundercracker changed his grip, applying painful pressure to the Predacon's shoulder actuator, and then hurled him through one of the remaining walls of his barracks, causing the ruin to collapse the rest of the way. "Holy scrap," Cliffjumper observed back at the reviewing stand. Around him, his fellow Autobots watched, slack-jawed. Razorclaw pulled himself to hands and knees, shaking his head, not quite able to believe what was happening. The last time a hunt had gone this far awry, his prey had been a Matrix-bearer. A simple jet soldier should pose no kind of threat, even a veteran such as Thundercracker. Roaring, he transformed to beast mode and sprang, intending to bring his superior speed and his titanium-rending claws into play. Thundercracker met this attack with a pair of drone rockets that sent the Predacon tumbling across the ground, then charged after them, the jet thrusters in his legs giving his leap tremendous speed and range. Razorclaw had barely regained his feet when a whirling kick with the full thrust of a fusion turbine behind it sent him hurtling into another wall. He returned to robot mode and tried to bring his concussion blaster to bear, but Thundercracker was already upon him. "You don't get it, do you, Razorclaw?" Thundercracker demanded, knocking the weapon away and delivering a tremendous punch to the Predacon's midsection. "None of you ever got it. I'm not just some sky soldier. I'm a seeker." He blocked Razorclaw's counterblow, caught him in another one of those agonizing holds, and threw him halfway across the clearing. "Decepticon Special Forces, 13th Air Commando. I survived one of the most grueling selection processes in the history of Cybertron." He hauled Razorclaw upright just to knock him down again. "You were built for your position. I earned mine. And if I haven't done much of note since then, well, maybe that's because I came to believe the Decepticon cause didn't merit my best efforts. Did you ever consider any of that?" Roaring with fury, Razorclaw put every bit of his remaining energy into a single last-ditch effort, lunging with all his might toward his opponent, fingers bent into tearing claws. Thundercracker stepped into the charge, putting all the force of his body behind his right fist, and dealt Razorclaw such a punch in the jaw that it spun the Predacon completely around and stretched him full length on the ground.
"Down goes Frasier! Down goes Frasier!"
cried Rekgar with the voice of Howard Cosell. "Slamdance, make a note," Eject mused. "We'll need to get the rights to that sample cleared through Avalon Broadcasting." "No, of course you didn't," Thundercracker answered his own question. "Well, now you have something to think about in the CR chamber. Scavenger, get him to repair." Scavenger just stared at him for a second, then shook his head and replied,
Right away, Commander."
"Gentlemen," Trailbreaker declared, "I think I have now officially seen everything."
"Slaggin', eh?" Cliffjumper agreed. "That was bitchin'."
Sideswipe sighed and turned to Misato. "Looks like next time we go drinking, you're buying," he said.
"See, that's why I don't gamble my booze money," she said sagely.
Autobase Comsen, Iacon. Grimacing, Sylvie massaged her temples as she squinted at the waterfalls of code that scrolled down her screens. For 3 hours, she had been trying to decipher the communications channels of the unknown constructs, but a mixture of eye strain, information overload, and slipperiness on the part of her quarry was making it difficult.
"Damn it. Okay, that's it. I'm calling in the big guns on this. Let me get my best protocol guy on the horn."
She toggled on her Cortana's telephone app and launched one of the speedcom codes. A moment later, Blaster was vaguely surprised to hear a guitar. It took him a second to place the riff. It was the intro from ZZ Top's Woke Up With Wood. And a second more to accept that he really was hearing it, in the Autobot Comsen, in the middle of an inexplicable network crisis. Then it stopped, 8 bars into the song, and started over, and he realized it was a telephone ringtone. Blaster and Sylvie looked at each other, then turned slowly in their seats to look across the room toward the sound of the music. It appeared to be emanating from Soundwave. The Decepticon comm officer hesitated, as if feeling their incredulous gaze on him, and then continued resolutely on with what he was doing, leaving the riff to play over and over again.
"Ain't you gonna pick up, boss?" asked Rumble.
Soundwave ignored him, so after 2 more rings, the Minicon leaned over, pressed the play button on his leader's abdomen, and announced jauntily,
"Soundwave, Rumble speaking."
Sylvie stared at her Cortana for a second, then cut the connection and started stalking around the Comsen perimeter catwalk with what even Blaster recognized as a someone-has-some-explaining-to-do gait. Drawing even with Soundwave's station, Sylvie stopped, put her fists on her hips, and said icily,
"Excuse me, Soundwave? Or would you rather I called you Gabe?"
Soundwave glanced up, met her gaze, and then returned his optics to his work.
"This is really not the time."
"I can't believe this," Sylvie blazed, ignoring his demurral. "I mean, me, of all people, you'd think I would be aware that nobody on the net is who you think they are, but for Christ's sake, you're Gabriel Blackrock?"
"Yes."
Blaster stared at the scene playing out in front of him.
"Oh, you have got to be kidding me."
Sylvie folded her arms, scowling.
"Well, I guess I know now why you couldn't make it to Multicon. Protocol guy for a network apps company, active in the Takara Sector Society for Online Anachronism? My ass."
Soundwave stopped working for a moment and looked blankly at her.
"We were outlaws then. You're a cop,"
he explained.
"I took the liberty of bullshitting you."
Sylvie threw up her hands.
"Everything about you was a bunch of lies."
"It wasn't lies,"
Soundwave corrected her.
"It was bullshit."
Sylvie opened her mouth to berate him further, then ground to a mental halt as she realized he was making movie references, ones from a film that had been one of the points of intersection between her pop culture continuum, as it were, and that of Gabe Blackrock. Which meant, what? That something of what she'd liked about Gabe was really in there, somewhere, under the weird voice and detached affect that marked Soundwave out even among his fellow Decepticons? Then her face reddened and she clapped a palm to it.
"Oh my God, I just remembered the Christmas Hollow I sent you last year."
Soundwave nodded, still bent over his console.
"I enjoyed that very much."
Sylvie looked out between her fingers at him.
"You did? Seriously?"
"Seriously."
"I can't decide whether that makes me feel better or even weirder," she said matter-of-factly.
Then, putting both hands to her head, she declared,
"Ah, I don't have time for this right now."
"I tried to tell you that 5 minutes ago, but no,"
replied Soundwave, shaking his head resignedly.
"Of course, that was after we had to explain what it was," said Frenzy,
but before he could go on, his brother had grabbed him in a headlock and hauled him away from the console.
"Ixnay, dude," Rumble grumbled. "You trying to screw up the only shot the boss has ever had, or what?"
Frenzy eyed his brother.
"Are you getting deep on me, bro?"
he asked skeptically. Sylvie ignored them, or possibly didn't hear them. Instead, she kept glaring at Soundwave for a moment longer, the anger not completely gone from her face, but largely replaced by bemusement, then sighed.
"I have to get back to work. We'll talk later. And believe me, we will be talking."
"Affirmative,"
was Soundwave's only reply, But Rumble turned his brother loose and sprang up to the catwalk to pace alongside her as she recrossed the room to her own station.
"The boss ain't real good with the whole feelings thing," he told her, "and we ain't really got the time right now. But I just want you to know, apart from me and the rest of the boys, you're pretty much the only friend he's had in about 6 million years. So, you know, don't be too hard on him."
Sylvie stopped by her console and gave him a thoughtful look.
"You wouldn't bullshit a girl too, would you, Rumble?" she asked.
"Hey, I'm a punk, but I ain't no fink," Rumble replied.
She looked at him a moment longer, then said, "I'll take it under advisement. You better get back to it. But thanks."
"Not a problem," said Rumble, and then he sloped back to the other side of the room.
"Don't say anything," Sylvie cautioned Blaster when she noticed he was looking at her with a look of complete bafflement on his faceplate.
"I wouldn't even know where to start," Blaster admitted. "Besides, I'm up to my skid plate and weird, weird stuff here."
"Yeah, sorry about that." Sylvie sat down and started scrolling back through the error messages that had piled up while she'd been across the room. Then she sighed.
"Frag it. I'm not going to get anywhere with this. Without a low-level scan, we're not going to gain any ground on cutting them off at the source. I need to get boots on the ground, metaphorically speaking."
So saying, she dug into her pack and came out with a barrier collar, fitted it on, and made sure its jack plugs were seated in her C-spine ports, and then cabled it to her Cortana.
"I'm going in," she said, and without waiting for an acknowledgement, she hit the big green button.
WDF Air Station Cybertron, Officer's Lounge. "Operational again in the next couple of days," Chuck Keith reported. Terror nodded.
"Good. And nice work, by the way. I'm looking forward to reviewing the video," she added with a grin. "It's good to see the Getter team is keeping the old WDF Baptism of Fire spirit alive."
"Oh, we're definitely doing that," Keith agreed.
"So this Decepticon thing, it just came out of nowhere, huh?" Terror asked.
Alexis nodded. "Much like Megatron himself," she added wryly.
"I know, right?" Terror said. "That's wild. Are they all back on Cybertron now?"
Alexis shook her head, a shadow momentarily crossing her face, and replied,
"No, not quite all."
Decepticon Force Blue Headquarters, Aerovex. "Lord Megatron," said feedback. "Incoming communication from Force Red." Megatron looked up from his planning table, blanked it, and asked,
"Can you track its origin?"
"Negative," feedback replied. "Shriekback has routed it through at least a dozen ghost relays and satellite cutouts, just as I would have. She knows precisely how long I would need to trace the signal all the way back. I guarantee you she will not permit Thundercracker to remain online that long." Megatron chuckled dryly.
"Then we'd best not keep him waiting. Hail, Thundercracker! What can I do for you?"
Thundercracker, scuffed and dented, looked out of the holotank with crossed arms and declared flatly, "I have defeated Razorclaw. Under the Predacon code, he and the rest of his team work for me now." Megatron seemed oddly pleased by this intelligence.
"Indeed," he said. "Congratulations. You are aware, of course, that once the game is over, you'll be at the top of his personal revenge file."
Thundercracker gave the barest of smiles. "Enemies make life interesting." Megatron actually laughed at that.
"Wise words, Commander. Very well. I shall forward this redistribution of forces to Soundwave to be logged in the official record of the game. And Thundercracker..."
"Yes?"
Megatron smiled.
"Well played. Megatron out."
From the corner of the blue command post, Onslaught observed calmly, "You seem very sanguine for a commander who's just lost a significant asset."
"I am delighted," Megatron agreed. "Thundercracker continues to surprise me. That's worth the possibility of Predaking fighting for the Reds."
Onslaught eyed his commander but said nothing for several seconds. Eventually, Megatron said pleasantly,
"Is something on your mind, Onslaught?"
Onslaught weighed his reply carefully. "I'm reevaluating the length of the game you're playing, sir." Megatron sat back in his command seat with a satisfied expression.
"Excellent. You're beginning to catch on."
Autobase Comsen, Cyberspace. Even though Sylvie had entered the local network quite a few times these past few weeks, entering Cybertron's infosphere always caused her to take a virtual breath, just to take it all in. In her short life to date, she had logged thousands of hours in the networked infrastructures of multiple worlds, and although each one had been created by a different sapient species, they all had an overarching flow and format in the way the domains and network sites were connected. Network architecture was like DNA. It could do a billion different things, but down at the scale of the base pairs, it was all basically the same stuff. You had your data corridor trunks, your heavy load routers, your infinite levels of branching domains and access points. Multi-layered nodes of data and processing power, connected by communications links spreading out in a fractal filigree. Clusters and rings of networks accreted upon themselves in layers as societies grew and expanded their computing capabilities, sometimes removing the legacy networks, sometimes consuming them. But always there was a sense of artifice about it, that these things had been created by mortal hands and had developed over a finite span of time. Cybertron's infosphere was different. Yes, there was much that was familiar to Sylvie's net-diving experience. Giant transforming robots used the internet and had their own computing centers, just like anyone else. But that was just a thin veneer over the gigantic non-Euclidean mass that was Cybertron's internal network. Everything, from the largest building to the smallest door, had a network identity, a means by which to communicate its status to something else. Roads and river gates, streetlights and scrap processors, cottages and city-states, those that still function continually reeled off updates and queries to their neighbors. Among and between them flowed the rapid-fire messages of the denizens of the planet, not of the Cybertronians themselves, but that of its wildlife and maintenance drones, going about their life cycles as they had for millennia, with no means or need to use anything as inefficient as acoustic vocalization. Systems large and small repeated their litanies of status updates and function executions to anything that would pay attention to them, or to nothing at all. The very messages themselves forming much of the underlying structure of the digital world. This level of interconnectedness was practically unheard of in every other network system that Sylvie had ever read about or experienced. It was as if Cybertron were an organism in and of itself, and she was only seeing a minuscule portion of the whole. Sylvie shook her virtual head. No more time for wool gathering. Time to get to work. She pulled up a diagnostic and checked that her avatar was running properly, with all the relevant utilities cached and ready to run, stepped her auto-annotation level down 3 steps from where she normally kept it, so her field of view wasn't completely crammed with tags identifying every node and system she could see from the broad chrome plaza on which she'd resolved, switched her avatar into combat mode, which caused it to manifest a virtual suit of CVR-3 armor, and then brought up a navigation pointer to direct her to the affected node. It was a short run from the Comsen's arrival plaza, short enough that she didn't bother launching a travel utility. She arrived to find Soundwave and Blaster already there, along with various of their Minicon helpers, their avatars ultra-realistic renderings of their robot forms. The sector beyond was surrounded by a rippling blue-white curtain of energy, a visual representation of the firewalls they'd erected to bottle up the incursion in that one area. "Okay, fellas," she said, "let's go see what's what." With administrative permissions set, they passed through the firewall as if it weren't there and entered the affected sector, to find a scene of utter chaos. The sector was like the digital equivalent of one of the devastated zones of Cybertron's real surface. Its surfaces corroded and corrupted. Some of its structures damaged, others crashed outright. The online icons of Transformers, most of them small, rushed here and there, some trying to make a stand, others simply fleeing in panic. Others were sprawled on the virtual ground or frozen in place, their avatars flickering or partially derezzed.
Okay, wasn't expecting this, Sylvie observed. What the crap is going on in here?
Let's ask somebody, Blaster said. Reaching out a hand, he caught one of the running minicons by the shoulder. Hey, buddy, take it easy, I'm an Autobot. I'm here to help. What's going on?
Error.
The other Transformer replied, his voice tinny and flat, low-resolution audio. And disconcertingly, female, where the icon itself clearly represented an M-type chassis.
Unauthorized program access.
What the? That's his status computer talking, said Frenzy.
Hang in there, buddy. We'll help you out, Blaster said.
Error. Stack overflow. Voluntary functions compromised,
the Minicon's status computer announced.
Energy systems disrupted. Spark loss imminent.
His avatar began to derez. Lacking the time or inclination to do it any more elegantly, Soundwave pushed brusquely past Blaster, transformed one of his hands into an interface spike, and rammed it into the hapless victim's chest.
System function override 33LF2.
The Decepticon comm officer intoned urgently.
Purge anomalous runtime and commence emergency stasis lock.
The Minicon re-rezzed, his avatar going rigid. Then his computer replied,
Software purge complete. Stasis lock commencing.
And he disappeared. A clean log-off, not a crash. Blaster, Sylvie, and a couple of Blaster's cassettes all just stood there staring at him for a second or so. Then, ignoring their looks of shock, Soundwave pointed into the distance and said,
Alert! Unauthorized network activity approaching. Probability of imminent attack, 99.945%.
The others shook off their surprise and looked where he was pointing, up the digital canyon that was the sector's main trunk. For a second they detected nothing, apart from more fleeing forms of network transformers trying to reach the firewall. And then they saw it, a dark and indistinct shape at first, then... Some kind of swarm program, Sylvie muttered. Hunter nodes, Blaster said. Soundwave nodded.
High probability the creator of this swarm is using it to compromise the local population's cerebro systems via their wireless network link modules.
Sylvie opened one of her utility menus and rezzed up a broad-spectrum antiviral, which manifested itself in an Ehara-Lisberger environment as a sort of high-tech flamethrower. Somebody call an exterminator? She asked. Frenzy glanced at her, a faint cousin of a smile touching his face. This human might have a little style after all. And then the swarm was upon them. The Minicons of this district had been going about their everyday business, maintaining low-level wireless contact with the planetary network around them, because that made it easier to accomplish many everyday tasks. Most Transformers were so equipped these days, and few gave the link a second thought. Rarely did any of them actually extend their consciousness into the virtual world, shutting down their physical functions and focusing on their virtual avatars, the way Soundwave, Blaster, and their cohorts had done to get here. It was just something you had running in the background to pull status updates, open doors, and look stuff up on Galactopedia. Even now, most of the figures Sylvie and company saw here weren't really here, not fully. The avatar behavior they were seeing here was the virtual environment's interpretation of these individuals' reactions to what was happening to their links. The comm officers and their Minicon partners had barrier elements that were made of sterner stuff, as did Sylvie. Their active response and determined resistance caught the swarm by surprise. If it had been a simple, distributed attack utility, such as one might use to crash a website, that would have been the end of it. But it soon became apparent that it wasn't. It knew what was going on around it. Sylvie realized it at the same time as Soundwave, when the swarm suddenly diverted, disengaging from the unexpected resistance and moving off in pursuit of the locals, who had taken advantage of the distraction to leg it deeper into the sector. Seeing this, Sylvie reacted without really thinking. She shut down the antiviral utility, which was making limited headway against the swarm anyway, and rezzed up a transit mod instead, calling up a virtual cyclone to go with her avatar's CVR-3.
"Wait,"
Soundwave called, but she'd already jumped into the saddle and raced away, leaving the protective circle of the two comm officers' barriers in pursuit of the swarm. Well, not the swarm itself. She blazed past that without a glance, outracing it easily. The group of minicons she'd spotted had reached the firewall and realized they were trapped, lacking the correct admin permissions to pass through and escape. She pulled up in front of them, rezzed up her 3WA ident tag out of sheer habit, and told them, "Sector's locked down. Shut down your Wi-Fi modules and stay offline until further notice." The minicon avatars looked at each other, so consumed with panic that they didn't realize what she was telling them at first. "They're attacking your neurosystem through your wireless links," Sylvie yelled at them. "Unlink and get out now! They can't get you in the real world." "I hope," she didn't add out loud. Then, twisting the cyclone's throttle and slewing the back wheel around in a nicely rendered cloud of virtual smoke, she turned to face the oncoming swarm and tried one last time, barking back over her shoulder, "Get offline!" The minicons finally seemed to catch on. One by one, their avatars winked out as they disengaged from the network. Sylvie hunched over the handlebars, watching the swarm approach, timing her next move carefully. Then she punched it, peeling back toward Soundwave and the others. Small, hard impacts peppered the cyclone's cowling in the front of her armor, nearly unseating her. It was like riding through heavy hail, and for a second she didn't think she was going to make it. Then she burst through the other side, heading back for the group at full speed. A sharp pain pierced her upper arm. The hand instantly went numb, and she lost control of the cyclone. She went down hard, unable to use her arm to break her fall. The cyclone derezzed in her wake as she skidded across the simulated metal ground and fetched up at Soundwave's feet.
"Sylvie,"
he said urgently, kneeling to turn her onto her back.
"Status report."
"Not sure. Can't feel my arm," she said. "I think one of them corrupted my avatar."
She raised herself up and looked down to see the structure of her avatar's arm derezzing. Silvery threads of static spreading slowly up from the site of the original pain toward her shoulder.
"We got company," Blaster declared, blazing away at the oncoming swarm with a virtual representation of his Electron Scrambler rifle, to relatively little effect.
"Situation untenable,"
said Soundwave.
"Recommendation, immediate withdrawal."
"I heard that," Blaster replied. "Disengage utility's not running," Sylvie reported after a moment. "I'll have to cut my link outright, which is going to suck."
"Go,"
Soundwave told her.
"I'll cover you."
Straightening, he stood over her, put the edge of one fist to the open palm of his other hand, and drew a glowing sword icon from it. "Nice animation," part of Sylvie remarked as the rest of her concentrated on steeling herself for the dump. The last thing she saw online, before her vision broke up into staticky scan lines and blacked altogether, was him lunging to engage the swarm, his sword leaving a trail of lightning in its wake.
"Gah!"
Sylvie exclaimed, sitting bolt upright at the shock of disconnection. With a frustrated snarl, she yanked off her barrier collar and glared at it. It was uncomfortably warm, sparking and smoking from several of its seams.
"Fuck!"
"Whoa. Never seen that before," Rumble observed, rubbing his neck in sympathy.
"Soundwave? I'm clear. You can get out now." Sylvie got unsteadily to her feet and made her way, first stumbling, then striding, then running as her body got back into better touch with her brain, to his station. Soundwave! Hey! Soundwave sat immobile for a moment longer, then twitched, his optic visor brightening, and turned to face her.
Operation complete,
he reported.
Sample collection unsuccessful. Intrusion swarm elements configured to derez if captured. However, log files indicate the swarm elements are interconnected with complex mass pooling protocol. Hypothesis, distributed AI network. Origin, still unknown.
Distributed AI? Sylvie whistled. That doesn't sound like Megatron's doing. Soundwave shook his head.
Negative. No online offensive planned. Technology inconsistent with any known cyber weapon.
He tilted his head thoughtfully and added,
Of course, I'd say that anyway.
Sylvie snorted, recognizing a reasonably mild dig when she heard one, but said nothing as she took over one of the Minicon stations adjoining his to see what sense she could make of her Cortana's incident logs. Blaster rose from his station and crossed to their end. I got bad news and bad news. What's the bad news? Sylvie asked. I got a partial lock on the network node we were in. Enough to know that whatever's going on, it's going on somewhere near here, physically. Okay. What's the bad news? I only got the first 6 octets. That leaves an area of about 250 square miles, and every outside icon link in this room except the game feed from Aravex flatlined when we punched out. Shit. It's way past time we kick this up the chain of command, Blaster went on. He leaned over Soundwave's shoulder, punched a couple of keys, and pulled an image of Red Alert's office onto that console's main screen. Hey, Red? You got a second to check something for me? Can it wait, Blaster? I'm in the middle of some calibrations. Blaster groaned and rolled his optics at the security chief. No, it can't wait. We've got a serious sitch going on with our network security. We're getting no carrier across the board, and we've got a sinking feeling that it's rolling over into the real. Sighing, Red Alert set aside the work he was already doing, turning to face the bank of monitors that cycled through the planet's multitude of security cameras. Oh, very well, if you insist. Where do you wish for me to start looking? This is a somewhat large planet we're talking about. Sylvie spoke up, consulting several of her displays. We need the sectors around Uriah, Altahex, and the Turon Interpass checked out. We haven't been able to get anything more specific. Whatever's happening, it's originating from within the set of net addresses that originate from those areas. All right, one moment. Sylvie watched with bated breath as the screens in the background of the image flickered too rapidly for the human eye, even enhanced, to see. So far, everything looks clear. Hold on. Red Alert paused in his review, then began replaying several sections of footage. A deepening scowl could be seen on his face as he started bringing up more monitors and sensor readouts. What? What is it? Sylvie asked, standing on her seat to try and get a better view. In the comm window image, she could see several images of streets populated with minicons and transformers. Images that seemed too regular, too orderly for her eyes. Oh no. Red Alert nodded, confirming her unvoiced suspicion. The cameras in the vicinity of Little Iacon have been spoofed. A mixture of video feed repetition and simulated imagery. Quite cunningly done, I am forced to admit. If you hadn't brought my attention to it, the automated systems likely would not have flagged it immediately. Slag! We need to get eyes on target yesterday, Red! Already on it, Blaster. Red Alert replied, plying his controls. Repositioning cameras on the border of Altahex and the Tower of Pion now, forwarding the visual matrix to your station. What they saw was not encouraging. A normally bustling district, its upper levels empty and peripheral streets, all that could be resolved from the neighboring zones, deserted. Overhead, strange craft with profiles reminiscent of some swarming insect or unknown ocean life form, or a hideous combination of the two, moved in orderly patterns, some arriving, others leaving, while the area's anti-aircraft emplacements did nothing to stop them. In the distance, a couple of the cameras could make out the flashes and smoke columns of ongoing combat. "Do we have aerial feeds?" Red Alert shook his head. "Apparently, your mysterious intruders have managed to circumvent the observation satellites tasked to the area and the airspace above. Your team will need to take the time to re-establish contact with them and reboot them."
"Damn! That's time we don't have."
Sylvie clenched her fists, frustrated at how the situation was rapidly spiraling out of control. She looked up at her Autobot co-workers and then pointed at one of them. "Lightspeed, do you think you can handle the reboot on this end without our help?" Lightspeed hesitated for a moment and then nodded. "We'll take care of it, Sylvie." "We'll do what we can to maintain the firewalls and re-establish contact with the dark zones, too," Chromedome added.
"Good."
She grabbed her critical gear, stuffed it into her rucksack, and looked up at Blaster and Soundwave. "Gather your guys. We're going on a trip." "Security assets are spread thin as it is with the Decepticons in the field," Red Alert told Blaster, "but I'll see what I can do about getting you some backup down there and notify Prime."
"Thanks, Red," said Blaster. "We're on our way."
With both comm officers' cassette crews gathered up, the three ran down to the rapid transit station on sublevel C to find, as they might have expected, that the trains to Little Iacon weren't running. Blaster scowled at the out-of-service hollow above the subway tunnel for a moment, then rezzed up a holographic map on his comm panel and studied it.
"Man, Little Iacon West's got to be 20 miles from here. How are we going to get there in time to do any good?"
Soundwave looked up and down the tunnels for a moment, then suddenly transformed into not his usual micro-cassette player mode, but instead a square-sided, solid-looking Cybertronic ground vehicle.
"Let's go,"
he declared, opening a door. Blaster stared at him in shock.
"What? You got... That is so not fair," he sputtered, then transformed to boombox mode and let Sylvie carry him aboard.
"Walking is for suckers,"
Soundwave remarked as Sylvie put Blaster on the passenger seat and belted herself behind the wheel. Then he cautioned his passengers,
"Don't mess with my presets,"
before speeding back across the platform, up the stairs, and out onto the surface road leading away from the Decagon.
"That's it. Soon as we get back, I'm going in for a reformat," Blaster declared. "I gotta have my wheels back. It ain't right."
"All you other Slim Shadies are just imitating,"
Soundwave said, drawing a sharp giggle from Sylvie. "Hey, hey," Blaster objected. "Pop culture references are my job, or Jazz's, not yours, you overgrown Walkman."
"Your insecurity is not my emergency,"
Soundwave replied imperturbably.
"You know what? I ain't even talking to you," Blaster remarked. "I'm gonna go over the log files and see if I can figure out anything more about that whatever it was we just fought on the flip side. Wake me up when we crash."
With that, the Autobot comm officer went quiet, the spindles of his playback module rotating silently.